This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Tim Baton and Jenna Denzi. How are you guys?
Yeah, doing well, thanks. Thank you.
How are you? Thanks for having us.
Excellent, excellent. You guys are from the Real Ale Shop. And the Real Ale Shop is a... Well, it's a beer and wine retailer in London. I'll just start with Tim. Do you want to just give us an overview of what Real Ale is and what you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So the company was founded by owner Nick Dolan in 2005, I believe, a long time before I started. They're an outlet just focusing on bottle-conditioned UK beers. They had a shop in Twickenham, which is still there now. And the business has kind of evolved throughout the years to encompass wines and spirits and obviously embracing the kind of craft beer phenomenon that we know and love today. We also have a website. We've got two more shops as well. West London opened over the last 3 years. I helped kind of oversee that. We've really changed a hell of a lot since 2005. I've joined the company in, when was it, 2014? So I've been here over 5 years. Yeah, that's kind of a nutshell summary of where we are at the moment.
Who do you sell to? Because we were trying to schedule this a little bit earlier, and you guys were busy trying to do some sort of due diligence or something like that with Marks and Sparks or Marks and Spencers at some point. So do you, it's not just the retailers.
That was me being audited by M&S. Yeah, that's right. So part of our business is wholesale into multiples, and so we're an agent, and we can take breweries through the process of putting their beers, their branded products, into retailers. But also we work with M&S to develop own label products as well, and that's part of what I was doing. Yes, we couldn't get the meeting in. I was having my agent audit on Monday. That's another side of the business that I work in.
But you guys aren't brewers though, but you supply own labels. So are you like the middleman between the supermarket and the brewer?
Yeah, that's right. We're this conduit. I always see we're this conduit between breweries who are interested in taking their business to that step. And M&S, and we help the breweries really do what they need to do to comply with becoming a producer for a retailer the size of M&S, which can be quite a sort of torturous path for smaller breweries. And you know, it's great to have smaller breweries having their great products on the shelves of you know, a retailer like M&S, and so that's what we help.
So it's not the big breweries like, I don't know, Fuller's, the bigger brewers. It's more the sort of niche stuff when they're trying to get the beers into the supermarkets and develop their range?
That's right. We work on a range of different size breweries, yeah. So we've worked with Arbor and Harbour and, yes, and we've worked with Oakham as well. And so breweries of different sizes who are ready for that step. And it's not for everyone. And some breweries prefer to stick with working with Tim on the retail side of our business, and that's where they're happy to take their business. But when they're ready, we're there to hold their hand to
okay.
take that step, yeah.
So is a lot of the brewers that you take through that are the brewers that you've dealt with on the retail side, and then you just help as a conduit to get them to the next step?
The majority of products we've got in M&S, you know, were from breweries who we certainly at least initially supported and stocked in our shops over the course of the last, you know, 15 years.
Cool. What I want to talk about today is a little bit about the difference between the sort of wines and beers and the people who purchase those type of products. Because when I first started buying beer from you guys, probably not too far off 2005 when you guys started, you guys really were just a beer shop. That's all you really stocked. You had lots of beer. And then sometime about, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, you started adding wines to your list. And they're quite quirky, quite a lot of organic stuff, if I recall initially. But mm-hmm. what was the reason from being a pure beer shop to a more of a mixed drinks outlet?
There are lots of reasons. I mean, primarily from, this is speaking from maybe my perspective, I see kind of pure beer retailing or just retailing beer on its own as quite limiting. And I think it's a very, very kind of niche and hard category to succeed in if you're just limiting yourself to one sphere of the drinks industry. So from my perspective, I find it much more liberating to work with great wines, great spirits, you know, low and no alcohol free, you know, you name it, just, you know, just as long as it's good, we'll stock it. Obviously the shop opened under the name Real Ale, kind of being quite linked to the whole traditional ales, you know, bottle condition, you know, we used to do Camera Beer Club and stuff like that, you know, it seemed like a very long time ago, and it's far before I actually joined the company, but that's where our kind of roots lie. But as I said earlier, you know, we've just changed so much and really adapted and embraced change rather than kind of just sticking to what we're doing. I mean, I come from a wine background previously. I used to work for a fine wine retailer in Bath. So when I joined in 2014, I had, you know, a fair bit of wine experience and certainly a lot of enthusiasm, and next to nothing on the beer side. So I kind of just thought this was amazing. You know, I drank beer my whole life, obviously, but never really thought much about it. So I just discovered this whole new sphere of drinks. I just, yeah, loved it. And then, you know, started getting some of my old favourite wines back in from different producers and gradually kind of rebuilding the range. I mean, you're right, there was lots of interesting wines. When I joined 2014, we already had some links with really good suppliers. But I kind of made the range a little bit broader, I think, to try and appeal to as many people as possible because, you know, we're not a specific wine, or what people would perceive as a wine retailer, that's not why people come through the door primarily. So you've got to kind of hook them in with recognisable faces as well as, you know, the esoteric awesome things that were already there.
With a name like Real Ale, I would have thought that your main customer base would have been people looking for beer, to be honest.
Well, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, it was a hard sell to begin with and it wasn't take off immediately, but we kept at it, we chipped away. Yeah, certainly in Twickenham, perhaps that's definitely like the least winey shop, if you like, because we've got the smallest space allotted to it. But the other shops are pretty much 50-50 in terms of layout.
Oh, so really?
They're completely different, yeah.
Yeah, because I only know the one in St. Margaret's, Twickenham sort of thing. That's the shop we buy a lot of product from. So
that's maybe, just for people who haven't been in, that's maybe like 20-25% wine in terms of layout as opposed to beer.
The customers who buy beer and the customers who buy wine, is it the same customer buying both, or do you find some customers are more beer orientated, some more wine orientated?
It's a bit of both. I certainly wouldn't say, you know, they're not mutually exclusive at all. I mean, I think one of the main reasons for selling wine was, you know, so that we could sell wine to people who came in for beer and vice versa. Mm. And I think that's worked really well. You know, we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves. But yeah, sure, you definitely do have, you know, your people who are well into beer and IPAs and all the newest and most crazy things that have come out. You know, they will just be interested in, you know, the action beer fridges. And maybe occasionally they'll get, you know, a wine for, you know, horrible cliche, but their better half or something. But there are a lot more kind of broader...
Medium white wine for the missus.
Yeah, I know. It sounds awful, doesn't it, 2020 to say that. But, it, you know, we do come across that. In the middle of the spectrum, you've got a lot more kind of casual drinkers who, you know, they want good quality stuff, but they're not experts, they're not geeks. They just want... They want variety, really. So as long as we can provide it in terms of beer and wine, you know, we're just adding to our sales by stocking both. So yeah, people do buy both beer and wine, basically.
My experience in the store is the guys, when I talk to them, are very beer, you know, they some of the guys really know their beers really, really well, which is brilliant. Yeah. Because I'm a little bit, I wouldn't say ignorant, you know, I understand the brewing process pretty well, but I don't in beer my whole time looking at what's hip and what's cool and what's trendy and all that sort of stuff. So but the guys seem to know their stuff. Wine's got a very easy and transparent education process. If you want to learn about wine, there's a couple of providers that you can go along to and learn about. bear, I'm not so sure about. What's the educational process for bear if you want to become a bear expert? And it's not just developing a big bear and growing a shaggy beard. I notice you haven't got a shaggy beard, Tim. I don't know if you're a proper bear expert, are you? If you don't look like ZZ Top, you're not a
doesn't.
proper bear man.
Yeah.
I've
The
flunked my
majority
bear
of the
exam,
guys
obviously. I dropped out. Yeah, no, that's a really good point because I feel like definitely, I may not know everything there is to know about this, but I feel beer is kind of lagging behind, the formalized education that certainly exists in the wine world, the WSET and all that jazz. That there are things like, IBD, the beer sommelier exams and stuff like that that people can do, but it's very much kind of like self-study, as far as I'm aware. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of it's distance learning kind of stuff. But I think it definitely is an emerging market, and I think I remember reading somewhere that WSET are starting to introduce, beer training.
Yeah, they are.
So I don't know how that's going, but I'm really excited to see where that develops, really. But yeah, certainly from my perspective and staff I work with, if we're all very much, self-taught, kind of we just love drinking great beer.
What about yourself, Jenna? Because you said you're into the more of the technical side of things. Have you done sort of any qualifications?
Yeah, so I'm a bit of a process geek, I suppose, and I've always been. Whereas, so I've been in the industry since 1996 and started because I love the science of beer, which is basically a great mixture of engineering, biochemistry, and so I think I started then looking at various professional qualifications like diplomas because I was working in a brewery and that was appropriate for me to be able to understand more about what I was doing there. And then ultimately progressed to completing my master brewer exams in 2007. So from a professional point of view, there's lots of exams, as there are in many professions, that you can do to sort of show that you have a particular understanding within the industry. But I mean, my recommendation to people who want to understand more about beer is just to drink a variety of products with different, made with different ingredients, and similarly with wine, people have very specific types of beer that they like that they will choose again and again, or some people are more adventurous than others, and I think that's always a good start, is just to start to find the types of styles that you really enjoy. And then if you want to understand more, yeah, there's all sorts of tasting courses and there's lots of people online, podcasts, and lots of people doing talking about and comparing their views of beers as well, and getting quite passionate about that. And I think that's another way of exploring what's out there and who's saying what about different products and processes. So
Okay.
yes, I think there's a bit of education out there for every sort of level, depending on how far you want to go.
Do you find wine drinkers, when they're buying beer, they look for certain styles of wine? Because as a wine person, we're sort of trained to look for certain things. And I'm just wondering if there's any sort of equivalent things that you look for in beers and that wine people might be no more naturally drawn to because of their sort of previous consumption habits.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking about a stereotypical kind of wine drinker who will go for, say, a Cabernet or a Merlot. What beer styles do they gravitate towards, or what do they?
Yeah, or if they're a hardcore wine drinker, they might go for slightly different types of beers. But is there a, if you're a reasonably enthusiastic wine person, do you look at beer differently to say maybe your average beer drinker?
I mean, it depends what kind of wines you're into, I guess. So in the kind of the natural wine crowd, for example, people will probably be much more open-minded to certain types of beer, like Gers and beers with Brett in and things like
It's like
that.
sour beers and things like that.
Exactly. So sour beers, funky beers, wild ales,
Barrel
saison,
aged, maybe, yeah.
farmhouse, barrel aged, that kind of jazz. The majority of people who drink wine, I guess, wouldn't think too much or care too much about the beer styles other than it not being massively alcoholic, or sometimes people want things that are just light and refreshing. When people are coming in and they're loading up the car with wine, often they'll just want a case of lager or something, our Goulburn Hells, which is our house lager. you know, that's an easy sell to a lot of our wine customers. You know, they want something just clean, crisp and refreshing and well made, but they don't want to think about it too much.
I tell you what, that is me 100%. And people laugh at me because I drink easy beers, because if I want to drink something challenging or engaging, I go for a wine. But sometimes when you've just mowed the lawn and been gardening all day, you don't want anything complicated. You just want something clean and simple.
And that's a beautiful thing, right? There's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, I love lagers, you know, absolutely adore refreshing, crisp lagers, you know, any time of year, especially in the summer. And also sometimes, you know, buying, you know, a double IPA, it could be the best thing in the world, but it could also be a bit of a misfire. So I think there's a bit of a kind of a cautious element to people who maybe don't know everything about the current beer scene, because it is exhausting to keep up with it, as we've already discussed. You know, it changes so much.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit about that next week, actually. But one of the things about beer that they've done well that wine trade cannot do very well is low alcohol product. Like, low alcohol beer can be pretty disgusting, but there's some good ones out there. They're actually quite nice. You know, I remember I do triathlons. First time I had a Erdinger, I just finished a sort of Olympic triathlon. Someone gave me a beer and I went, oh, I don't know about that, but it was brilliant. You know, I was knackered and it just... It tasted fabulous, and it was low alcohol. And I was like, my God, this is the first time I've had a low alcohol beer that I thought was good. You look at the wine scene for low alcohol, and you can find one that's drinkable, but I would always go for a normal, you know, an alcoholic wine over that.
You're right, Chris. I think the beer industry is a bit of a guiding light at the moment in the low alcohol trend that we're seeing, which is, you know, stuck like glue. It's not going anywhere, and I think wine is catching up. There's many different processes available to make low alcohol, and I think there's a lot of extra ingredients that brewers can use as well to help give mouthfeel. Can imagine you're trying to produce a beer with lower alcohol and you can miss out on some of the mouthfeel that you would expect with that the alcohol gives you. And
alcohol goes body, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the brewers are getting quite clever at using sometimes lactose or really punching in some extra hops and getting very clever with the use of the different ingredients to sort of fool us, to fool our taste buds into that this is an alcoholic product. So yes, I think it's fantastic.
Okay, so it's other ingredients that they're using in the process to give that feel, whereas wine, they tend sulfur dioxide and some fining agents, which aren't really in the final product. It's mainly just grape juice of some sorts or another.
And I believe in the wine industry, they will use some de-alcoholization. But that is a massive piece of kit that involves, you know, a lot of capital, and so is, you know, difficult. Whereas I think for brewers, it's much more cost effective for a smaller craft brewery to have a go at making low alcohol products. And that's why we're seeing, you know, more suppliers out there having some success with this.
What are the sort of trends at the moment in the beer world? Because I remember about a year ago, I was doing a lot of lactose beers, you know, the milkshake beers I think people talked about. And I kind of like them. I thought they were really interesting. Not everybody's cup of tea, I must admit, when I've tasted them with people, but some people really like it. Are they still a thing? Because they've got a very short shelf life, those lactose beers.
Yeah, lactose, certainly from the people I've seen in the shop, is very much kind of a like it or loathe it kind of thing. Certain people kind of gravitate towards these quite kind of almost confected style beers with big mouth feel like that, and some people just can't stand it. But yeah, as we talked about, you know, beer trends change so quickly, and some things kind of like rise up and then fizzle out straight away, thinking things like brute IPAs. But most recently, I guess over the last year or so, we've seen classic kind of beer styles reemerge. So people have been hankering after just really great Bavarian lagers and kind of crisp pilsners and stuff, and also to a kind of a lesser extent but still important kind of more traditional English beer styles like bitters and milds, and a slight resurgence in cask. So it's almost like it's come full circle from when we opened the shop in 2005 to kind of now.
One of the things I don't like about some of the modern IPAs is that they're quite hoppy. And I know an IPA is hoppy. You know, that's its definition. Is it supposed to be a hoppy, bitter high alcohol beer, but I'm seeing things like people saying low alcohol IPAs, which to me is an oxymoron. You know, is the definition of an IPA is high alcohol. So what am I missing here, Jenna? Is it such a thing as a low alcohol IPA?
Well, I think the thing is that the industry over the last 10 years has really sort of smashed the barriers of styles, and the sort of divide between different styles is a grey area that many brewers are just going out there and exploring and making their own definitions, really. And so that's what I think you're finding with low alcohol IPAs. And you know, trying to pack in as much hop to give you that flavor and aroma and bitterness, and trying to balance that without the alcohol is very difficult. And so the brewers that do that successfully, you know, I bow down to them. It's a great art.
I do think you're right about smashing the category boundaries, because I don't think brewers actually have any boundaries, do they? In wine world, we're quite rigid and we're like, well, this is this and this is this and this is this. And there's lots of rules in the Europe about it. But in the beer world, yeah, People just do what the hell they like. They seem to be more maverick.
They do now. They didn't used to. But certainly, yeah, more recently, judges on panels have a more tricky time with the styles. They used to have a sort of definition listed for each style, but that's a much more tricky task now to actually do that for beer.
All right, I think we're going to wrap it up there, guys, and next week we're going to talk a wee bit about the brew process, which is a little bit different for us because we are a wine show, but I think there's some interesting stuff that you can learn about the brew process that might actually help people understand the wine process as well, because it's still fermented alcohol, fermented, yes, sugar. So yes. I'll wrap it up there, and
thanks, Chris.
Yes.
Cheers.